Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara,
and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and so be amazed of this heartbreak. I wanna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears when I reach there. I'll scream, yeah.
Let me read you. this is from Nancy. Our weather, it's not worth mentioning. It's depressing. Hi, Joe. Okay, last thing Joe needs is any friends, okay? He's on, like, academic double probation. I got this over the weekend, too. Again, this is... I told you how cool my life is, right? In fact, somebody sent me an email It was during the week, but not while I was on the air. And they said, did you think that all this would happen? No, I didn't think any of that. I didn't think any of this through. All I did was I thought I could help. That was my inclination. And I thought, well, you know, I could... If I do a show about, you know, about our culture... When they're not paying attention, I can sneak in mental health stuff. I can trick them, right, into thinking about it. And it worked. Yeah. You know, songs like this hurt. It's okay to hurt, man. Nobody gets to the car wash without getting jacked up by something in the car wash. And after they get wet. Right? So none of it. But after 2 years, my instinct was, and this is, I think, a little bit of a leader and somebody who cares, right, is I need to share this. And so that's what I started doing. And then I crossed paths with Dave, and then that's kind of taken off. And that's become the kind of the proving ground of all this, right? That's the data point into the 10th month. And one suicide. So,
but right now it's just me.
So no, I didn't. There was no script to this, right? So, but again, because of this, all this cool stuff happens to me now. This is entitled Veterati. I was listening to a podcast about transitioning to civilian life, and saw the link to Veterati. I signed up as a mentor. I have a lot of years in the defense industry as a hiring manager, so maybe I can help a vet. I continue to learn something new every time I listen to your program. Thank you. That's from Dan. No, Dan, thanks for listening, man. Just go change somebody's life for the better. Help them out. And watch what happens to your life. What I've learned is just the coolest stuff in the world. But again, let's see. What I've learned is the stuff that I learned growing up. I've learned how to apply that. All the stuff I've learned at school and going to Catholic school and, you know, all the stuff that we did in our community to help people and things like that. I mean, so it's almost brought me back to that, you know. And although, you know, what post-traumatic winning does in a secular way, you can always see the religious and the pieces of faith that are involved in it. So anyway, time to check the news. So we're going to check the news, and then we're listening to a press conference, and I'm going to do color commentary, which everybody knows I love to do, with Secretary Esper and General Dunford. Somebody sent me another email. This is a guy, this is 2 weeks ago. Why haven't we seen General Dunford very much? This is just my He would never say this, but I will. I believe that the reason you don't see General Dunford as much in public, or you see him in very controlled settings, is he does not want to get put in a position to be asked questions about, you know, the president. They don't have very many press conferences over at the Pentagon anymore. And it's been that way for a while. I think so I think he's decided that the best thing for him to do would be maintain a low profile. And he has a week from today until he gives up his post. So I would imagine he is he's largely in he's largely in overwatch right now, as his probably close to 40 years of service comes to an end. Joe Dunford. Yeah. And so pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And who's the chief of staff of the Army? Willie Wiley? He will take over. So I imagine General Dunford's in overwatch this week. He's out of the office. Or maybe not. I don't know how that works. Do they get out of the office? Do they say, no, I want you to be in here and hit the ground running? Some guys do. I bet some guys don't. Yeah, you can move your shit in when I move out over the weekend. So... Anyway, all right, we'll check the news. So then we'll listen to that press conference. Then Jim Mattis, retired general type, he was on, this week? Yeah, ABC's This Week, talking about Iran. So I want to play that, and you can hear that too. So we'll do a little bit extended current events today. I'm also going to talk to my Iranian expert, and so we'll see when we can get her on, so she can do a little bit of explaining. But she said my life's been a little bit crazy. Well, I said, you can't imagine why it would be. so I think you'll enjoy meeting her. And we'll have an Iranian version of Grant Nushin, which is to me pretty exciting stuff. Pretty exciting stuff. All right, top stories. U.S. military helicopter drops container unit on a building in South Korea. Nobody was injured. All right. The Russian Prime Minister calls the U.S. plans for breaking the Kaliningrad air defenses idiotic. A U.S. general's comments about a plan to break through Russian air defenses in the military enclave of Kaliningrad, if necessary, were dismissed by Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev as idiotic, Russia's TASS news agency reported on Friday. So anyway, that discussion was, you know, again, in the spirit of great power competition, that's an important choke point, right? The military is looking into deaths of Alaska-based soldier and an airman. They were discovered in separate locations on Friday. One died in San Antonio, Texas. He enlisted as an Air Force. He was an airman. Enlisted in the Air Force in March of 2006. The death of the soldier was found at Fort Wainwright. That's in Fairbanks, Alaska. And there is no further information about that. So that is in the news. And other than that, slow news weekend. USNI. The investigation comes out. The Marine Corps found that pilot error, inadequate oversight of training and operations, and an unprofessional command climate contributed to the December 6 crash of an F-18, the Hornet, and a KC-130J Super Hercules aircraft that killed 6 Marines and injured 1. Now, this investigation, honestly, I've been waiting for this, and we'll get some guys on to read, you know, read pieces of it and talk to us. But here's essentially what happened. Because, you know, in the aftermath, nobody could ever remember hearing an accident like this. The Commandant of the Marine Corps may appoint a consolidated disposition authority to continue investigating the findings of the Judge Advocate General investigation, which was recently concluded and just announced. This is Friday. 4 officers from the Hornet Squadron have already been relieved of duties throughout the course of the investigation. Quoting from the investigation, at approximately 1:30 a.m. on December 6, 2018, while flying at an altitude of 15,000 feet, 2 FA-18 Delta Hornets assigned to VMFA all-weather 242 joined a KC-130J assigned to Marine Aerial Refueler Squadron 152 for air-to-air refueling. The first FA-18 Delta, the lead, that means of the 2 aircraft he was in charge, or she was in charge, completed refueling and moved to a position on the right side of the KC-130J. After the second FA-18 Delta completed refueling, its pilot requested and was approved to move to the left side of the KC-130J. A non-standard maneuver for air-to-air refueling departure procedures. The pilot of the second FA-18D was not experienced in conducting nighttime air-to-air refueling operations. The investigation indicates the mishap pilot lost situational awareness, unintentionally crossed over the top of the KC-130J from left to right, and collided with the rear of the tanker. The investigation was thorough and concluded and included data recovered from the downed aircraft. Evidence shows both aircraft had been properly maintained and were fully functional before the collision. There is no evidence to suggest that either aircraft experienced any malfunction prior to the collision. The summary reads, before pointing to a series of contributing factors were identified, including but not limited to inadequate oversight of training and operations by the squadron leadership, an unprofessional command climate within the squadron, and the pilot of the mishap, FA-18, lack of proficiency with the mission of night-to-night, air-to-air refueling. During the course of the investigation, 4 squadron officers were fired. The CO, the XO, the OPSO, and the aviation safety officer, according to the summary. The many findings of the investigation reconfirm our need to constantly evaluate risks, identify unsafe conditions, and ensure internal controls are being followed. Commanding General of 3MEF, Lieutenant General Stacy Clarity, wrote, Stacy was at IRC when I was there, when signing off on the investigation, that we must all learn from these failures and not repeat them. Interesting. So, yeah, that has been a long time coming. You know, what happened? So what happened was, after he got done refueling, Dash 2 tries to move to the left side of the KC-130. In moving to the left side, he clips the aircraft. There's a prototype Boeing conducted its first flight of a prototype unmanned aerial refueling aircraft on Thursday, testing its handling and the Navy's ability to fast-track the long-stalled program. So they have it. You know, why do we need people up there when we can do it with machines? Interesting article I saw last week. Marines and Navy both considering something like an offshore support vessel to supplement the amphibs. Now, this is written by Megan Eckstein. Megan Eckstein was there last week. I did not. I should interview these people so you can know about them. The Deputy Director of Expeditionary Warfare on the Chief of Naval Operations Staff said the Commandant's guidance lines up with what the Navy was already considering. Offshore support vessels. How do we as an amphibious warship force in the United States Navy, how do we support this expeditionary advanced base operations concept? We came up with the same thing the Commandant put out in his guidance. We saw a need for a smaller set of diversified ships we call OSVs. Interesting. So, that in the news. So, again, the evolution of... Now, there's also a number of people that think the Marine Corps has got to be careful and not become too specialized, not to become too narrow. It still has to be general infantry. Still has to be general infantry, and then beyond that, it can be... It can certainly do amphibious things. But it still has to maintain its generalist set of skills. So we'll see. We'll see. Biggest headline out of Marine Corps Times late last week is 13 Marines charged with offenses related to alleged human smuggling operations. The charges involved include failure to obey an order, drunkenness, endangerment offenses, larceny, perjury, and Journal Article 134, according to... Article 134 charges are specifically related to alleged transporting and or conspiring to transport undocumented immigrants, the release said. 12 of the Marines charged hail from the 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, and one Marine was assigned to 1st Battalion, 1st Marines, the release said. The Marine assigned to 1st Battalion, 1st Marines was detained by Border Patrol on July 10th. That Marine has been charged with endangerment offenses, failure to obey an order, and general article, according to the press release. 5 Lance Corporals have been charged with the general article only. 3 Lance Corporals have been charged with perjury only. 1 Lance Corporal has been charged with drunkenness only. And 1 Lance Corporal has been charged with larceny, failure to obey an order, and the general article, according to the press release. This all starts, right, when that one Marine was detained, and then it went from there. So, there you have it. You have an investigation of the KC-130 collision that came out, and also the Marines that were detained in formation a couple months ago. Now they're being charged. Veteran suicides increase despite host of prevention and mental health efforts. Why don't they work? Veteran suicide rose in 2017 despite concerted efforts in recent years from federal officials and lawmakers to address mental health and emergency intervention services within the military community. Veteran Affairs officials noted in a new analysis released Friday that because of a data delay, their report does not take into effect any new initiatives that have been put in place over the course of the last 22 months. So this is 2017 data. So The other story is a Marine that was that left Arizona headed for Camp Pendleton that was reported missing, found in Texas at a rest area, unharmed. Makes no sense, right? All right, we'll do the top five stories in Early Bird. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and you'll hear me do color commentary on the press event that Secretary Esper and General Dunford had, and then you'll hear General Mattison. Do a little colored commentary on that. Top story today, one, Boris Johnson blames Iran for Saudi Arabia oil attack. You know what's amazing, right? What's amazing is this narrative, Saudi Arabia, right? Their prime minister, I mean, it's laughable. You're watching the emperor's new clothes unfold right before your very eyes. Anybody who would attack us will pay. Like, okay, so you're just going to launch cruise missiles against other countries, unprovoked? And then you're going to say anybody who would attack you is going to pay? An announcement that was made late last week, Pentagon prepping to send troops to Saudi Arabia's aid. So the question is, what kind of troops and what are they going to be doing? Now, you heard, if you listened to Jeff Kenney speak at all about this thing, right? His first concern is for Americans that are spread out all over Iraq. Okay, so what are we deploying? The U.S. is preparing to deploy troops to the Middle East in response to what officials have deemed an Iran-based attack on Saudi Arabia's oil fields last week, Secretary of Defense told reporters on Friday, so you'll hear that in a second. This is the first step we're taking regarding responding to these attacks, Esper said, not ruling out further escalation if the deployment does not deter further aggression from Iran. The announcement came after a meeting with top Pentagon officials and National Security Council on Friday afternoon. The troop deployment will be defensive in nature, Esper said, focus on air and missile defense capabilities. I'll talk to Central Command over the weekend. I'll talk to our Saudi partners, and we'll work out the details, General Dunford said. So the U.S. has already sent about 500 troops to Saudi Arabia's Prince Sultan Air Base this summer, the first deployment since the U.S. stopped sending troops after the Iraq invasion. I'm looking for more information. So, no more information about what units actually go. And here's another story that continues to be in the news. Navy SEAL and Marine Raider may face life in prison as they go to a general court-martial for the death of a Green Beret. Now, I think that's a good headline. I think the truth of that is that they did not go there to kill him that night. And I believe what they'll ultimately be convicted of is manslaughter. And we're talking about the death of Staff Sergeant Logan Melger, right, in Mali. That happened in June of 2017. Dates for the court-martial hearings have not been set at this time, according to the release from the Navy Region Mid-Atlantic Public Affairs Office. The charges were referred to general court-martial on last Thursday for Navy Chief Special Warfare Operator Tony DeDolph and Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant Mario Madera Rodriguez. They were referred by Rear Admiral Charles Rock, the commander of Navy region mid-Atlantic. Both the Dolphin Madero Rodriguez faced charges including felony murder, involuntary manslaughter, obstruction of justice, hazing, and burglary. The two service members made their initial appearance in court for an Article 32 on August 5th. So they'll go to general court. But again, I don't think anybody believes that they went there that night to murder him. They went there to teach him a lesson for some stupid reason. But that story's still in the news as the special operations community continues to show its ass. Number four, Saudi Arabia still owes the U.S. $181 million for Yemen refueling. So that's in the news. Five, veteran suicides increased despite a host of prevention and mental health efforts. So here's a couple operational headlines, right? AFRICOM conducts first airstrike in Libya this year in an attempt to dismantle jihadi activity. U.S. Africa Command conducted its first airstrike in Libya this year in an effort to dismantle violent extremist activity in the region amid signs of increased recruitment and other activity, according to the command. Well, you know what? I have this to say about that. We've seen where all this bullshit bombing gets us, okay? Right? You want to influence somebody? You can't do it by bombing them. I mean, we learned it in Vietnam. We've bombed all kinds of people. Doesn't seem to have any effect. So, you know, this is a great data point. Congratulations to AFRICOM for shooting a missile. Alright? Well done. The United Arab Emirates joins the Naval Security Coalition in the Gulf. And USA Today is running a story. Afghanistan war veterans still waiting for a peace deal ask, was the sacrifice worth it? Well, that's, again, A and B. Was the sacrifice worth it going after Osama bin Laden? Yes. Has all the rest of it been worth it? No. Because you have a vacillating nation, the United States, that did not have a clear image in its head of what it wanted to do in Afghanistan. And so it dabbled there, decided that the juice wasn't worth the squeeze, and now wants to leave. Was that worth it? Fuck no. And the people responsible for that should go to prison for it. Yeah, you fuck it up. You cause the deaths of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people. You don't get to walk away and write a book. So anyway. All right, so we're going to take a break. I'll do my breathing exercises. We come back, and we'll go ahead and you'll hear Secretary Esper, and then you'll hear former Defense Secretary Mattis with General Dunford thrown in with Esper. So don't touch that dial. More current events on a Monday coming up next.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends, these are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on the throne? I wonder where you are and live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all. So I don't need you.
9:32 on a Monday. Yeah. The second to the last Monday of the month. All right, now I want to play for you right now the press conference from last week. So I always think it's beneficial to hear this stuff straight from the horse's mouth. So with me doing color commentary, this is the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They approach the podium.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. General Dunford and I just returned from the White House.
This is Secretary Esper, as you might imagine.
Where we met with the President and his national security team to discuss options to deter Iran's continued aggressive behavior. As we have seen, the Iranian regime is waging a deliberate campaign to destabilize the Middle East and impose costs on the international economy.
He meant to say destabilize.
In recent months, Iran has increased its military activity through direct attacks and support to its proxies in the region. In the Persian Gulf and Gulf of Oman, which are vital waterways for global commerce, Iran has threatened the safe passage of ships by attacking commercial vessels and illegally seizing a British oil tanker. In Yemen, Iran is perpetuating war by providing sustained financial support and advanced weapons to the Houthi insurgency. And on June 20th, Iran shot down a United States unmanned aircraft that was flying over international waters. Despite repeated calls from President Trump to begin diplomatic talks, Iranian aggression continues to increase. In the face of this sustained malign behavior, the United States and other countries have demonstrated great restraint in hopes that Iranian leadership would choose peace and reverse Iran's steep decline into isolation and economic collapse. But the attack on September 14th against Saudi Arabian oil facilities represents a dramatic escalation of Iranian aggression. It is clear, based on detailed exploitation conducted by Saudi, United States, and other international investigative teams, that the weapons used in the attack were Iranian-produced and were not launched from Yemen, as was initially claimed. All indications are that Iran was responsible for the attack. The United States has a responsibility to protect our citizens and our interests in the region. And the international community has a responsibility to protect the global economy and international rules and norms.
Esper needs to relax, man. Come on, Mark.
All of this is threatened by Iran's significant escalation of violence. This week, I've been in dialogue with the Saudi defense minister and other partners about this latest attack. To prevent further escalation, Saudi Arabia requested international support to help protect the kingdom's critical infrastructure. The United Arab Emirates has also requested assistance. In response to the kingdom's request, the president has approved the deployment of U.S. forces, which will be defensive in nature and primarily focused on air and missile defense. We will also work to accelerate the delivery of military equipment to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the UAE to enhance their ability to defend themselves. The purpose of the additional defensive support we will provide is as follows. First, to send a clear message that the United States supports our partners in the region. Second, to ensure the free flow of resources necessary to support the global economy. And third, to demonstrate our commitment to upholding the international rules-based order that we have long called on Iran to obey. As the President has made clear, the United States does not seek conflict with Iran. That said, we have many other military options available should they be necessary. We urge the Iranian leadership to cease their destructive and destabilizing activities and to move forward on a peaceful diplomatic path. General Dunford and I will now take your questions. Thank you.
Mr. Secretary.
Really nothing new there, right? Wah, more, you know, just boilerplate from probably exactly what you'd expect the Secretary of Defense to say.
Thank you. You said air and missile defenses primarily. Could you be a little more specific about, are you talking about Patriot missiles, or and what number of troops are you talking about sending?
Yeah, so Bob, Secretary Pompeo just came back this morning, and the Saudis asked for enhanced defensive capabilities. So what we'll do now is take the President's decision. I'll talk to CENTCOM over the weekend. We'll talk with our Saudi partners, and we'll work the details of the deployment, and we'll be able to share that with you next week.
So there's been no decision on specific numbers?
We haven't decided on specific units. Broadly, as the Secretary said, it'll be capabilities to enhance their air missile defense. It's now my job to come back with to the Secretary with the details of what we believe would meet the Saudis' requirements and is sustainable.
Thank you. I just took this to follow up, and it wouldn't be, we're not talking about thousands of troops, we're talking about hundreds of troops, and also just the Secretary, do you think this is going to be enough, or why do you think this would be enough to deter Iran from further attacks?
We think given the state of play now, and then based on whatever assessments we get from Central Command, what the Joint Staff and the Chairman do, and other discussions we're having with partners, we have to continually assess that. We think for now that would be sufficient. But that doesn't mean there could be additional deployments as needed based on the changing situation.
And on troop numbers?
I would say at this point a moderate deployment, Phil, and we'll have more details for you next week, but not ready to share the details.
Not thousands. Thousands would be not moderate.
That's fair to say, not thousands.
Lucas?
Are there any plans to hold the Lincoln Strike Group any longer than currently planned?
We're not going to discuss any operational details at this time.
Barbara? For either of you, does this now represent a full U.S. commitment to defend Saudi Arabia and to defend the oil infrastructure of Saudi Arabia? And for General Dunford in particular, what's your concern about their ability, the Iranian ability, to launch swarms of drones at very great distances without any air defense detection of this incoming attack?
So what I'd say, Barbara, in terms of what we're doing is we're contributing to Saudi Arabia's defense. We would be looking, as the Secretary said, for other international partners to also contribute to Saudi Arabia's defense. And with regard to dealing with a specific threat like you just spoke about, you know, no single system is going to be able to defend against a threat like that, but a layered system of defensive capabilities would mitigate the risk of swarms of drones or other attacks that may come from Iran.
I want to double down on the chairman's comments two ways. First of all, I agree. What we would be deploying to the theater would be what would be necessary to help support and contribute to the kingdom's defenses. And at the same time, we're calling on many other countries who would also have these capabilities to do two things. First of all, stand up and condemn these attacks. And secondly, look to also contribute defensive capabilities so we can defend those things that I outlined in my remarks, whether it's the infrastructure in Saudi Arabia, and then the broader issues with regard to freedom of the seas, navigation in the strait, and then the international rules and norms that Iran is clearly violating.
Courtney?
You know, what's interesting is that, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of the UK, came out this morning and laid the blame for that attack on Iran. France and Germany, not yet have they said such a thing. So, I mean, it is pretty amazing. When you look at it, that here we are, and you have nations that, for the sake of their own commercial interest, do not want to tattoo Iran, which they clearly did. So just pretty amazing as this plays out in public.
Should we take this as this is the president's decision about the response to the attack in Saudi Arabia, and there's not a kinetic response that we should expect from the United States?
This is the first step we're taking with regard to responding to these attacks. And again, for the reasons I outlined, to help bolster the defenses of Saudi Arabia and provide equipment to both the Saudis and UAE. A second, to ensure the free flow of commerce through the strait. And third, to ensure we protect and defend the international rules-based order and try and convince the Iranians to get back on the diplomatic path.
But the deployment of these kinds of assets can often take days and weeks. Should we expect any other kind of more immediate response from the United States?
The United States has a robust presence in the Gulf already. We bolstered it further in May, so we feel quite quite confident in terms of our own defensive posture and our ability to do anything else as necessary. But that's not where we are right now. Right now, we're focused on helping the Saudis improve their defenses of that infrastructure.
Last question, Nancy.
Mr. Secretary, Chairman Dunford, you've mentioned that the international community should get involved, but you know some allies have questioned whether the attacks were in fact launched in Iran. I was wondering if you could give us any sense on whether you will declassify any evidence that shows that those strikes were launched from Iran, and also if you could give us a sense of timeline in terms of when these deployments could start.
So I'll say a few things. First of all, the United States is on the ground in Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Arabians are leading this investigation, and we will keep them in the lead with regard to the forensics. So we need to let that play out and let the evidence play out. With regard to the partners and allies, first of all, I would commend Secretary Pompeo. He's been on the phone and on the road the past few days speaking to numerous allies and partners about this incident. And regardless of where you think it came from, the fact is the Saudis were attacked by both drones and cruise missiles and are still vulnerable to attack. So asking allies and partners to contribute resources to help them defend themselves and to defend those things I spoke about, I don't think it's too much of an ask given the situation.
And we'll work the details, Nancy, over the weekend, and I'll come back to the Secretary early next week with some specific recommendations.
But you can confirm that the strike was launched from Southwest
Thank
Iran.
You. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. There you have it. That is Mark Esper and Joe Dunford late last week. And then here is... Again, kind of the boilerplate statements that you hear on a regular basis. And so then Secretary Mattis appeared on this week.
We're pretty different.
We're all unique in our own ways.
And so you're going to hear from him in about 20 seconds. So... Again, most people bring him on and say, well, we'll talk about your book, but I want to talk about Iran first. And then what you get is
of the 9 minutes that Secretary Mattis is on, 8 minutes and 30 seconds are devoted to Iran and 30 seconds devoted to his book. So such is life when you're a big timer like that. The he was on this week, who was it, with Martha Raddatz, I believe. And so here's that audio.
Issue, which is foremost, certainly the terrorism issue, the ballistic missile efforts,
this
have,
is his
cyber attacks.
This is his testimony year, a couple years ago.
To, we will work with our allies and try to bring Iran back into more responsible behavior, at the same time addressing all five of the threats that Iran constitutes. The nuclear issue, which is foremost, certainly the terrorism issue, the ballistic missile efforts they have, cyber attacks they've been conducting, and then the threats to international commerce.
That was former Defense Secretary General James Mattis testifying before Congress on the threat posed by Iran. General Mattis is the author of a new book called Call Sign Chaos, Learning to Lead. And General Mattis joins us now. Secretary Mattis, I know you're hesitant to talk about the Trump administration and current events because of sensitivities, but you have dealt with Iran for decades. We know they want sanctions lifted. But what do you think Iran is thinking at this point?
Well, Iran, Martha, is continuing to do what they've done for nearly four decades now, and that is be a destabilizing influence as they promote their brand of how they want the Middle East to go, their brand of how they want to lead the Middle East into this revolutionary fervor that gives the revolutionary regime its bona fides. You know, they want to look like the leader, and they're trying to craft a foreign policy that pushes others around. And this is the same thing they've been doing for many, many years. Not the Iranian people, but the Iranian regime.
But these attacks, as I said to Secretary Pompeo, have increased significantly in the past few months. Why?
Well, the Iranians, in terms of leading right now, feel they're under pressure. They are under pressure, and they're going to react the way they've always reacted. Just a few years ago, they put together a plan to murder the Saudi Arabian ambassador to Washington, D.C., less than 2 miles from the White House. This is the way this regime conducts its policy and has been for years since they attacked our embassies. They've attacked other people's diplomats. They've murdered the former prime minister of Lebanon. This is their modus operandi. There's nothing new here.
As you mentioned, in your book, you mentioned two instances where you felt the United States didn't respond forcefully enough to Iranian aggression, that in 2011, the U.S. foiled the Iranian plot to bomb that restaurant in Washington, and there was another in 2012 after an Iranian fighter jet tried to attack an American drone. Here's what you wrote about responding to that drone attack. I wanted calculated actions to restrain the regime so it couldn't thrust us into a war. Yet once again, the Iranians had not been held to account, and I anticipated that they would feel emboldened to challenge us more in the future. Looking at today, are you concerned that Iran once again feels emboldened to challenge us more?
I think anyone looking at this situation judges that, Martha. This is not something that should be simply an American administration policy. You see other nations, as Secretary Pompeo just mentioned, coming in to help on the freedom of navigation patrols. This is one of those situations where we need our allies, our partners, and when you need them, you have to build trust that we have a coherent strategy, and we're going to need to promote that and convince them, persuade our allies to be with us, because this is an issue. It's going to be best satisfied, possible outcome will come from a coalition of nations that want a stable Middle East. And that has to be our goal, to stabilize this situation as soon as possible.
Well, are you concerned the U.S. with...
You know, one of the things that is interesting is, you know, again, when bullies act like bullies, there's only one thing you can do as a bully. And you've seen where we are with, you know, with... China and with North Korea and with Iran. And it's America's weakness and the weakness of our Western allies to wield their economic power as a tool of politics because of their own inherent greed. Yeah, I don't want to do that, right? I don't want to do that because it messes up, you know, me selling soybeans or me selling cars or me selling soccer balls into China, which they're allowing me to do. And, you know, it's raising my GDP by, you know, 0.6%, this thing. And it's going to get me reelected. So, I mean, so that's what totalitarian regimes do. And it is constant bane of free people and free democracies around the world, is that we want, you know, to expand, right, what we do and how we do it, and the way we're going to do that is we're going to do it by, you know, economic growth. And so, you know, to turn our back on economic growth is not something that, you know, free people like to do. And as a result, totalitarian regimes exploit it. And so what conclusion, I mean, if you're the Iranians, I mean, clearly, what conclusion do you come to? I mean, Americans aren't going to do anything. They don't do anything to China. You know, they bloviate, you know. They've done, you know, some stuff now that they're about to get serious with China. But, you know, that's a long way off for us. Why would you come to any other conclusion? And the answer is you shouldn't come to any other conclusion. That is the conclusion. And that is, you know, that is how they run their foreign policy and how they, you know, why they've done what they've done for years. What is America going to do? Does America want, and now it's involved in Afghanistan, it's involved in Iraq, Syria. Does it want to be involved in Iran as well? No. So we can leverage that. We can leverage America's reluctance and the reluctance of France and Germany and other European allies to buy in with the Americans after low 18 years of war. Yeah, so I think those are important things, and, you know, the Iranians aren't stupid. He continues.
Withdrawal from the nuclear deal, which the Europeans did not want, could now complicate those efforts to work with them to counter Iran's aggression?
Well, I think what we have to do is we have to play the ball where it lies right now, and we need to work with our allies, come up with a very clear political end state that we're trying to achieve, which I think is pretty easy to articulate, that we want an Iran that doesn't destabilize the Middle East, doesn't attack its neighbors, doesn't try to kill diplomats. I mean, these are pretty fundamental, pretty basic principles. And then we work together economically, diplomatically, and in all other areas, in the defense area as well, to neuter what Iran is trying to do, the mischief they're trying to create.
Do you believe there should be a military response to what just happened?
Well,
now, mind you, this is supposed to be a discussion about his book, right? But this is the question that they want to ask.
Now that I'm outside the area of responsibility, a position of responsibility, I'm always reluctant, not knowing the full story, to give advice like that, Martha. I think what we want to do is absolutely use every diplomatic and economic means. And Secretary Pompeo made clear that he's in New York City to help orchestrate that as we try to stop the destabilizing behavior, but at the same time to get a longer-term degree of stability there in the region. The world needs this, the world's economy needs it, and certainly the people in that region don't need Iran to be continuing this kind of behavior.
Secretary Mattis, I just want to turn to something else that's in the news, and it's the whistleblower investigation. President Trump just said, I hope they can put out that conversation. Should a president be asking foreign leaders to investigate political opponents?
Yeah, Martha, this is not something I have any background on. I don't know anything more than what I've read in the news, and apparently no one has seen the complaint, so I really prefer to talk about things I know more about.
Okay, then let me turn to leadership. That's what your book is about. leadership and your life in your position in the Marine Corps. What do you think it takes to be a good leader?
Well, I think the most important thing that you have to have to be a good leader is you have to have the ability to build trust, and that starts with listening. I'll put it in George Washington's words, listening, learning, helping, and then leading. In other words, you start by understanding what others face, and then you figure out a way to help them. And as you do that, by helping them, you actually create the position from which your leadership will be listened to and be acted on. So I think it's a rather old formula, it's a rather dry formula, but it worked for George Washington when he was leading a revolutionary army, and I think it works today.
And one of the ways you end your book is saying what concerns you most is not external adversaries, it's our internal divisiveness. What do you do about that?
Well, I think we have to look at it as a problem in our society. A democracy cannot work without compromise, and we're going to have to learn to listen to one another, really understand, learn from one another, accept the fact that once in a while the people we disagree with might actually be right. And when an election's over, when we're done dividing ourselves and going into the voting booths and having good, strong arguments with one another, once the election is decided, let's get back together, start governing. We owe our children, we owe the next generation a lot better than what we're doing today in terms of solving our nation's problems.
Secretary Mattis, it's always great to see you. I feel like we're a long way from Luke Fallujah this time.
They have Martha Raddus. Again, of the 9 minutes, right? 7 minutes is talk about other things, and then the token mention of his book. But interesting. Again, I'm not sure. You know, the United States, and I don't know how you keep the president in his lane, but again, United States doesn't need to go to war with Iran. Where does that end? And as I said last week, the apex of American power is the threat of its use, not in its use. Because every time we use it, right, it doesn't go exactly as we script it. It gets messy. And we don't really want to go there. And again, it was the Saudis that were attacked, not us. So all of that means stay in your lane. Now, when the Saudis ask us for assistance or an ally, obviously we should assist, right? Yeah, that to me is right. But I don't know, you know, I mean, if you say, like, yeah, we need to tell Trump to dial it back, man. I don't know that he dials back. Yeah, that's just me. I could be wrong, but I don't think the dude knows how to dial it back. You know, that whole we're locked and loaded. Like, what does that even mean? Right? What the hell does that even mean? That's where we're at. Just thought we'd catch up on some stuff. Yeah, to me, reading, you know, just that small amount of the investigation that has been put out, on how the accident happened. We'll get the F-18 guys on. And to explain how refueling actually happens, how like a flight would approach the aircraft, who does what when, because it's done thousands of times every year and we don't see stuff like this. So how did this get screwed up? And why would they, wasn't there a safer way to execute that movement instead of transiting right across the top of the aircraft? You know, wouldn't you decelerate, create some space, move laterally, and then you know, rejoin? So I don't know. So we'll get the F-18 guys on, and we'll get them to do some explaining. So That'll do it on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, back in the studio, complete with Joe barking. Yeah, everybody loves that. Don't touch that dial. I spent the weekend with Viktor Frankl and at the Hanoi Hilton. So you'll get to hear about that in hour one. And again, I would encourage you, there's two great audiobooks I would encourage you to listen to in their entirety. And one is Man's Search for Meaning. And I'm going to put the version that I listen to, because at the end of it, it has a postscript from 1984, which is a speech that Frankl gives. And I like the speech too. So you get to listen to the book, and then you get to listen to the recitation of his remarks, which I think are very good. So that's one book. And then the second book that I'll post with the first hour is called Lessons from the Hanoi Hilton, Six Characteristics of High Performance Teams. And I would just submit to you that there's more about the Hanoi Hilton than it is somebody bloviating about high performance teams. So that's what makes it good. Sometimes it doesn't work out that way. So anyhow. And then hour two, we do some extended current events. The biggest, in my opinion, the biggest story is if you pay attention to things marine, is the release of the investigation by 3MEF of the KC-130J crash with the F-18 on December 6th of last year. So we finally know how that happened. Dash 1 refuels, right? Moves further to the right and forward. Dash 1, Dash 2 comes up and tanks and requests to move to the left of the aircraft, which is not the normal way that flights are staggered for whatever reason. And you're seeing that the inexperience caused by how many aircraft were down and pilots could not get the flying hours they needed as a contributing cause in the crash. As the pilot moves the plane from the right side of the KC-130, as you'd be looking forward in the KC-130 transitioning to the left side, somehow or other, he clips the KC-130, and both aircraft crash, killing everybody. Five on the KC-130, and one pilot survives from the F-18. So, anyway, you'll hear about that. So, have a great day on a Monday. All Marine Radio, over and out.